you know, support for herd immunity and stuff, right? Which again was also advocated by the government and promoted by like people within like the media class, which was like, oh, we need to like achieve herd immunity. And that means we need to actually be mixing more and licking more handrails and washing our hands less and not brushing our teeth.
The queen and country.
Like, yeah, we have to do it for the queen.
Not brushing our teeth.
Not brushing my teeth.
Just like lumping it all in. Yeah, and I am never washing under my foreskin ever again. Now that the government.
Do you remember clean for the queen?
I do remember clean for the queen because the Michael Gove image appears in my head a lot because this was also around about the time that he was.
That was about the foreskins, right?
This was around about the time that he was thinking about going for the Tory leadership. So he was like appearing in a lot more like public campaigns. But he looks really awkward in every sort of public campaign that he does, including like clean for the queen.
I don't think you needed to add the additional details after Michael Gove looks really awkward.
I think that Michael Gove is a one person demonstration of the incredible sort of siloing and separation between Westminster brain and normal brain, because anytime any kind of politician or political journalist or particularly like lobby journalist says anything about Michael Gove, all they talk about is like what a brilliant, like kind of razor sharp mind he is and how he's like the best debater in Westminster and he's the smart and like he's just like the smartest guy around. And everyone else is just like, that is a goldfish trapped in a balloon, which is steadily emptying of water. And he's panicking.
Dorian Gray's spitting image puppet, Michael Gove.
Yeah. It's just so. It's like if he really is such a razor sharp mind, why has nobody normal ever seen any evidence of it?
Why hasn't he invented a surgery to make himself not look like that?
He's so fucking smart. If you're so fucking smart, why is that your face?
Exactly. Yeah.
To be fair, if he's so fucking smart, why is that his wife?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, like, do you remember the whole, like, bookcase, like, thing when everyone was, like, obsessed with what was on people's bookcases?
And Michael Gove and Sarah Vines and Sarah was just like, it's a little Vines, book called Mein Kampf.
Well, it was like, there were a lot of these books about, like, eugenics.
My First Kampf.
There were, like, lots of these books about, like, eugenics and, like, the Charles Murray, like, race and IQ thing. And it led to this whole discourse about like around like bookshelf policing and whether number one, that's a thing, but also like
bookshelf Sharia.
Yeah. Or whether they were practicing cancel culture by like interpreting what books people choose to display very like publicly in their houses that they entertain people in when it's, I mean, I don't even know. I don't even know what to kind of say to that, but half because I don't remember actually what happened or the fallout was, but just the whole like bookcase.
They had some,
the bookcase Zoom thing
was
really weird.
They had some big history book that was like by a guy who's like either a Holocaust denier or like very Holocaust denier adjacent.
Do they not literally have a David Irving book?
Was it him? I can't remember the details.
That was it,
David Irving, who's like, he's one of your more famous Holocaust deniers.
And see, my immediate response to this...
He's been charged with Holocaust denial.
...is like, why would you read any massive fucking history book, but especially not one where the guy who's written it is basically, like, known for getting the facts wrong. Like, if I'm going to read a big, boring book of facts, I at least want them to be accurate facts.
I think getting the facts wrong is quite a generous description of David Irving's project there.
Oh,
like,
I mean,
there's no kind of like sort of strategy behind
it. I'm not saying there's not a lot more.
He just made a little bit of a mistake.
I'm not saying there's not a lot more to it, but it just strikes me as like, yeah, what? Like, what?
Well,
what is going on there?
Well, they tried to argue that, like, oh, it's important to read your opponents and, like, you know...
And
displaying a book on your bookshelf isn't an indicator of endorsement
or
anything.
Like, Gogglebox like, meme, but not Holocaust denial, Chris.
Yeah.
It was very, like, telling because rather than, like, trying to argue why it was fine to hold books on your bookshelf that you don't necessarily agree with, which like I don't think is necessarily incorrect. Her go-to was everyone is trying to cancel me. And like when you think about that, like it's an interesting thing to look back on considering how ubiquitous that now is. And how like the majority of like defenses that any one of these people comes out with when you like even mildly criticize them is the social justice left are trying to cancel me once again.
I would like at some point, maybe not like obviously not now, but I would like to do an episode basically looking at the kind of like the semiotic history of cancel culture and like even like where where the phrase comes from, because it actually had a very, very specific meaning, such and such is cancelled.
Yeah.
As really like only like kind of 5 years ago. And it's been repurposed in, I believe, for our purposes, an interesting way. But yeah, I mean, these are the same people who really not that long ago were making, like, kicking out the most amazing howling fuss about John McDonald making a joke about the Little Red Book.
Yeah.
So, I mean, yeah.
To be fair, if I was Sarah Vine and I had been willingly married to Michael Gove for like 30 years, I would refuse to be cancelled over a book on my bookshelf. Of all of the evidence about my judgment available, I would regard that as ridiculous.
Apparently, he has got an absolute beast.
Will they just keep it in the basement, or like what sort of some sort of affront to God?
Don't come on our podcast and try and talk things round to Fritzl. I see you. I can imagine that the
union of Michael Gove and Sarah Vine would produce some sort of minotaur that has to be contained and hidden from the light of day.
It was just but apparently he's got an absolutely gigantic penis. That is the Westminster gossip.
There you go. He is packing. So
he's packing. He's packing heat.
Okay. All right.
Imagine if he got sued by Michael Gove because he was like, I have a normal sized penis. But cease and desist.
So yeah, well, he would have to subscribe to the pod first. So welcome Michael Gove to the Post Dojo. We can talk about like pundits being very, very wrong on coronavirus. Mm. Both at the beginning and now.
Absolutely.
One thing I found very funny was also just like all the pundits kind of, who, by the way, are like coming straight off of like the Brexit, or like the 2019 election and this acknowledgement that like Brexit is going to happen. They were using what was happening in the EU as like a reason to justify like why Brexit was like taking place. So there was this very big preoccupation with like the Italians. Now, like in Italy, like the coronavirus had spread very, very fast. And it was like one of the first places where you could kind of see that, oh, you know, things are about to get really bad and we don't really know what's going to happen. But there was still like this kind of naivety around like, oh, you know, it's happening in Italy because of like, you know, EU regulations, but in the UK, it can't happen because we're an island. And also like we have a better health system and all these things that just turned out to be like entirely incorrect.
The thing about the coronavirus is the main mechanism by which it spreads is undemocratic institutions such as the Council of Europe. And because we're now, you know, distinct from that, if we were still in the customs union, it'd be all over us.
It was really interesting, and it's interesting to think about now because it's also like an example of how like there's now this kind of complete inability to see phenomena just as it happens. So even as we talk about coronavirus and stuff now, like the conversations that are still taking place are still about like the European Union or Brexit or Jeremy Corbyn. Like it's all kind of like meshed into this really bizarre thing where you can't actually like take a position on something like COVID and we sort of spoke about this in like the last episode where you can't take a position on something without having to sort of succumb to lots of like other types of phenomena, right? And I don't really know how like quite to describe it, but I think like the Dan Hodges like mocking the Italians and like Hanan saying that, you know, it can't, you know, the coronavirus won't be so bad here because of like our unique position in the world.
It respects the flag.
It kind of, yeah. it respects the Churchill statue and like does a little bow to it.
Coronavirus is a child of empire and it will not be decolonizing anything.
The coronavirus simply saw that the British people spend a lot of their spare time hunting nonces and it was like, they're all right, this lot. You know what?
I won't kill them.
Yeah. I mean, I like the attitude to like Britain is going to be fine in the coronavirus because, well, it's Britain, isn't it? It's sort of broadly indicative of our wider national malaise, which is like nothing bad can ever happen here because it is Britain, despite the fact that the entire history of Britain is mostly bad things happening in Britain.
And like the whole like Blitz spirit thing, like being invoked like multiple times. And in multiple ways, and this is very much like, oh yeah, the people who die of coronavirus, they're actually just like troops.
Yeah.
And the people who willingly die because they can't stop licking handrails, they're generals. Like, you know, they're like the power regiment.
Yeah. They're like the French Resistance, but what if they were better because they was English?
Oh, they don't like the French Resistance. I think the French Resistance went about things the wrong way.
Yeah, the French way.
Yeah, exactly.
They were too busy, you know, seeing their mistress, drinking wine and that. Not busy enough killing the Germans.
Reading Sartre.
Yeah.
That's what the French do.
Yeah. How well is an existential philosophy going to help you chop off the heads of SS officers?
How are you going to do the resistance if you can't even get out of that invisible glass box?
That is true. He couldn't resist his way out of an invisible glass box.
I think it's interesting because I think it's very much tied to the fiction, like the kind of self-sentimentalizing and self-fictionalizing idea that, oh, the reason we've never had fascism in Britain is because British people simply do not like being told what to do. And it's like, what, are you serious? Have you ever been anywhere in Britain? What are you talking about? Have you ever looked at anything about any like aspect of British history? British people cannot get enough of the boot.